We Come in Peace. By Franklin Thomas. Comment from Rune by making audio of this. Copyright 1955. Franklin Thomas to our friends from outer space. Come peace. Imagine the consternation which would ensue if a man from Mars should land his spacecraft at one of our commercial or military airports and announce to the world that he was the first of a contingent of visitors to our planet, and that they did not come here as invaders or migrants, but on a mission of peace and friendship, leading to the inauguration of an era of helpful cultural and scientific relations between the inhabitants of our respective planets. Nothing quite so sensational will be likely to take place in our congested areas at present, and certainly not if we do not change our official attitude and mode of reception to all visitors from outer space inimly, shoot them down first and talk to them afterward, if they are still able to talk. With our new Nike-guided missiles, it is doubtful if they could get near enough to be recognized as anything but an unidentifiable flying object. Nevertheless, we propose to tell you about an event precisely like our imaginary landing, exit, that it was executed in a much less spectacular and 7. Far more discreet fashion in a remote area where the danger of being shot out of the skies was avoided. The full account will follow a discussion of some preliminary considerations. First of all, why should we be alarmed or even surprised to learn that someone has done precisely what we have been hoping and planning to do just as soon as we possibly can? It is a well-known fact that when many minds are at work on the same problem, the solution is obtained by several of them almost simultaneously. Very likely it will be so with space travel. In view of our own present efforts, it should not take too long. For centuries men have speculated about the possibility of visiting other planets, but it is only since the development of high-powered rockets that men of science have taken the matter seriously. First, the possibility of reaching the moon by means of a space rocket appealed to them as the nearest objective in the heavens. Today reservations are being taken for the first trip at all planetariums, and the movies and television programs have brought space travel to the attention of children as well as adults. But the scientific investigation of the subject now has gone far beyond these initial stages. Space platforms and artificial satellites are no longer considered mere dreams but rather necessities for our future survival as well as stepping stones to interplanetary travel. 8. Mars has been the planetary objective usually considered the most likely to be achieved, but more recently there has been some consideration to the possibility that Venus might be equally within reach once we have mastered space travel, and the actual distance is some 14 million miles less at time of its nearest approach to us. That is a small matter where space travel is concerned. No resistance to travel is expected from space, so the speed of the spaceship can be tremendous if it can only get away from Earth fast enough. Here is the crux of the whole matter. But there is no doubt that it will be solved, for many of the world's greatest minds have turned their whole attention to this problem. During the past 7 years, the public interest in so-called flying saucers and space travel has become so widespread that it has reached out into every portion of the globe, and has been the subject of comment and discussion in the press of all lands. In countries behind the Iron Curtain, it is of course understandable that little information about such a subject filters out to the Western world, for it is surely regarded as a military secret. Perhaps the wily comrades have even figured out a way to use the flying saucers in their propaganda or Cold War against the Western democracies. They seem to have used about everything else. Be that as it may, we certainly would like to know more about flying. 9. Saucers, and kindred phenomena, as witnessed by those behind the Iron Curtain. It is, however, likely to be a useless wish. Even some of the supposedly free countries of Europe are extremely reticent about this subject, but recently we had the privilege of receiving a most remarkable communication describing in detail an amazing encounter with a Martian spaceman who landed his craft high in the mountains of Austria. Of course, it was impossible for any public mention to be made of this important event in that country. Their security regulations are far more stringent than ours. However, the full particulars of this marvelous experience, together with the message of the man from Mars, eventually reached us, and it is of such an important nature that we are giving it to you just as we received it, except for the fact that his was originally in the German language and has been specially translated for your benefit. We regret that the man who had this wonderful experience does not desire any further mention of his name. We would like to give him full credit for the splendid description of the saucer landing and of the spaceman, but as he feels that any publicity regarding his adventure might embarrass him with the authorities, we must accede to his wishes. We do not believe a disclosure of this experience in this country will cause any repercussions in any 10. Other land, although there may be as many people in other countries who would be most interested in this narrative. While it has been obvious that flying saucers did not confine their operations to England and America, little information beyond reporting and no occasional sighting has come from other lands. Recently there have been some indications that other things have been going on that cannot be so easily ignored. The day is long since past when a mere sighting of a flying disc is news or even remarkable. It has become a common occurrence all over the world. Even government spokesmen no longer are amused when the subject is mentioned. Many are less ready to scoff since Professor Hermann Oberth has stated definitely that they not only are real, but that they come from outer space. So it is no longer necessary to first attempt to establish their existence before we consider what usually happens when someone comes into close contact with them or with the people to whom they belong. No longer does the landing described in this book stand alone and isolated. From widely separated places have come reports of similar happenings, but each has its own distinctive features. Our Austrian friend noted some things which throw considerable light upon the nature and development of Martian 11 people, or at least of the higher types among them. Naturally, they are not all of one degree of advancement, and certainly those among them who have mastered space travel are far above the rank and file. As in all other contacts with the people of space, some form of telepathy or extrasensory perception is involved. So also in this Martian landing there is a peculiar form of communication used which makes it possible to understand the message without the use of words, which was very fortunate, for it is extremely unlikely that our friend would have understood the Martian language had the spaceman spoken aloud, and, of course, the spaceman may not have been able to speak German. Mr. Allingham was not so fortunate in his encounter with a Martian spaceman in Scotland, for he could not understand the Martian's language and, not being able to use extrasensory perception, was forced to resort to drawing's arid gestures. But he at least got a photograph, which was some consolation for not being able to talk with the spaceman. In the future, all aspiring souls wishing to contact the people of space should prepare themselves by developing the needed talents. In recent months there has been a considerable interest in flying saucers developing among the German people, who have been from the first greatly intrigued by the possibilities of space travel, having produced many great scientists in this field. There. 12. Impact of the flying saucer up all the trend of thinking among serious-minded people is well illustrated by the following quotation from a recent issue of Das Geistreich. The fact that other world beings are penetrating into our atmosphere, and into our self-destructive affairs, be they science, politics or commerce, forces all those in the know to reverse their thinking in many fields. Some vaguely sense things, others definitely feel that they are being inspired or led. It is not a question of our miserably limited, personal life, of health or sickness, of being saved in a physical sense, but rather is it a question of a greater spiritual development of mankind, or of complete retrogression. We, the people of today, have the choice either to grasp the hand of the other world helpers, or to carry on the deceptive business of the underworld of Lucifer. We are being warned by all too obvious signs in the heavens. Yet these very signs are being understood only by the few, while those of influence and authority wave them aside as superstition or the phenomena of an overwrought imagination. In the same article we are informed that flying saucers have been seen several times over Austria. In one instance, five persons made the observation and insisted that it was not a question of meteors. 13. In another article, the question is raised, is the Earth being watched by other world beings? The editor thinks that perhaps, humanity being what it is, the time is not yet ready for the full recognition of worlds that could only be known through extrasensory perception. Would governments admit employing men who have extrasensory perception? Hardly. How could they afford to? They would be labeled crackpots now, but times may change. In fact, the time may soon come when, if they are not doing so now, the defense and intelligence departments will find it necessary to employ specially endowed men as well as specially trained men to alert them to what is going on above and below the world as well as within it. The phenomena already observed and recorded together with those described in this book and many others, point to the obvious fact that there are already abroad in the world men, wherever they may come from, possessing faculties and powers which render our present use of our usual five senses as obsolete as the tools of a savage. That the trend is in this direction can no longer be ignored by any thinking person. Elsewhere in the same magazine we find an article which sheds considerable light upon the scientific explanation of the means by which the flying saucers travel so rapidly through space. Usually the subject, 14, is conveniently dismissed with the cryptic statement that they are magnetically propelled or that they are equipped with a means of overcoming gravity. Both of these statements are undoubtedly true, but are so meager in their information that the unschooled layman might think that all that would be necessary for him to do to achieve the former would be for him to secure a powerful magnet. As to the latter method, it is obvious that when it is so far developed that it may be dismissed so easily, then the time will have arrived when we may all levitate at will. Just press the button and, presto, you float away, out of reach of Earth's gravitational pull. This you may do in your dreams, but mechanically it just isn't that simple. Actually, huge sums have been spent in research in magnetics, and as yet very little is known. Many efforts have been made to harness the Earth's magnetic currents to power airplanes. But it has not occurred to many that there may be magnetic or other currents in space which may be equally useful. So far, the Canadian government's Project Magnet seems to have made the greatest progress in this field. They are reported to be on the verge of making an actual sustained flight. Of course, this kind of research is always far ahead of any publicly released statements. Research in magnetics is also known to be going on behind the Iron Curtain on a huge scale. 15. Large sums of money have been invested in anti-gravity study and devices by private enterprises and undoubtedly much more in classified research projects. All of which points to the likelihood of the realization of an age-old dream in the near future, namely, flight through space without the usual very cumbersome power plant. Hints of this possibility were recently given by Daniel W. Fry, a rocket technician, in his book The White Sands Incident. In Das Geistreich, we find some additional confirmation of these ideas from leading physicists. In this magazine, we are informed that the scientist Liu et al. Insists that the universe is filled with hitherto unknown radiations which not only have their origin in the stars but also in an invisible source of power. He continues to say that these radiations or rays would come from all directions and stream throughout the universe, and that the individual rays would, so to speak, neutralize each other and cause a state of equilibrium. Naturally, these radiations exert a pressure upon all bodies, but insofar as they exert an equal pressure from all sides, these bodies would be weightless in a free universe. When two bodies stand near each other, the equilibrium in which they find themselves normally is disturbed, because the rays which have penetrated them have suffered a loss of some of their original force. Now that body which is bombarded by weak rays on one 16 side finds itself pushed by a greater force on the other side. Thus it finds itself drawn to another nearby body, or to be more exact, pushed toward it. Now if such a radiation apparatus were fastened to the side of a vehicle, it would ride on forever, because the pressure of the radiations would be neutralized on one side and exert pressure on the other side. This same principle could be applied to an airplane or any other means of transportation. Many technicians have long believed that the flying saucers are propelled on magnetic force lines. These are known to cross each other everywhere in the universe and thus create force fields. But it is still a mystery just how the space travelers take advantage of these to operate their saucers. In regard to the anti-gravity research, the noted German physicist, Professor Hermann Oberth, is said to have made the following very significant statement: "There is a substance which practically withdraws gravity from any object which it covers." While Professor Roberth does not inform us just what this wonderful substance is, no doubt it will be much sought after in scientific circles and we will hear a great deal about it if it is not already regarded as a vital military secret. The implication is that we may be able to nullify gravity by the simple device of an anti-gravity paint. Marvelous, but almost too easy. 17. That the people of other worlds may have solved the problem of interplanetary travel before us, seems not to have occurred to many of our otherwise very advanced thinkers. Only since the widely heralded advent of the flying saucer has any serious consideration been given to this possibility. While hesitatingly admitting that some other worlds may prove to be inhabited, most of the astronomers and men of science generally are reluctant to concede that men of other planets could be so far in advance of us. It was a great step to even discover that perhaps we are not alone. Once the evidence has become more concrete as well as more numerous that space travelers have actually succeeded in navigating the vast interplanetary space in our time, and have made themselves known to at least a few of our Earth's inhabitants, then all of the preconceived notions now prevalent will undergo a change, whether these notions are in the minds of scientists or laymen, in order to incorporate the newly observed data and adjust their thinking to the new situation. Not actually new, perhaps, but new to the minds of this generation. That such a change in outlook will take place in the near future is evidenced by the increasing number of men of highest rank in scientific and governmental circles who are revising, or even reversing, their former pronouncements upon these matters. 18. They are already aware that we are on the verge upon some new and startling developments which may change the entire picture and modify our way of life. During the past 3 or 4 decades, there have been numerous attempts to establish conclusively the existence of intelligent beings on the planet Mars by radio, radar and light beam transmissions designed to attract the attention of the inhabitants of that planet. The Martians were expected to recognize that an attempt was being made to communicate with them by means of these signals and to reply in kind, if at all possible. So a careful watch was kept for some acknowledgement of the reception of our beamed messages. Many reports of strange signals were received from time to time, beginning with the report by Marconi of having mysteriously received the letter V in International Wireless Code along with some other undecipherable signals emanating from some point in outer space, which he thought to be from Mars. As no one could interpret the meaning of the various messages, little progress was made in this line of investigation. It does not seem to have entered the heads of these early investigators that the Martians might have developed a means of communication entirely different from our various conventional methods. That the Martians might have developed some form of extrasensory perception did not occur to those. 19. Merely interested in proving intelligent life to exist on Mars. And so it was not until the prevalence of the flying saucers when Mars was closest to the Earth, caused many laymen to wonder if it were not possible to communicate with them, for they felt sure human beings must be aboard them or at least in some way maneuvering the disks. No longer was the interest in other worlds confined to scientific observers nor the investigation of unidentified flying objects confined to military or Air Force personnel. Thousands of laymen got into the picture who were no longer primarily concerned with mere sightings. They wanted them to land or at least communicate with them. Perhaps this deep-seated desire was largely responsible for the deluge of messages from the people of space coming by all manner of means and to, and through all manner of people, from the most ignorant to the most highly intelligent. No longer was elaborate and expensive electronic or light beam equipment required, nor long years of scientific or engineering training needed. The basic equipment was in the possession of everyone. The human instrument, the nervous system, could be used. And it did not occur to many that in the new field of extrasensory perception the old adage could well be extended, namely, that all is not gold that glitters. Likewise, all messages are not messages. 20. From Mars or Venus or from spacemen for that matter, just because one would like to think so, or even if the message says so. The possibilities for deception in this field are legion. Here one might well apply the biblical injunction to try the spirits to see if they be of God, or in other words, for your good. For spirits they are, whether embodied or not, and this kind of communication should be regarded as no different basically than other types of spirit communication. So we still need to prove all things and hold fast to that which is good, and cultivate our reasoning ability and judgment to the highest degree while retaining an open mind concerning all unknown and future possibilities, for the door is just beginning to become slightly ajar. But the desire to shine by becoming a channel for communication with the denizens of other worlds could well be the undoing of many an unwary soul, for the dangers are many for the neophyte in the world unseen. While many beautiful and marvelous messages have been received by automatic writing and kindred methods by some, there are others who have been unable to close the door to unwanted communicators who insisted on taking complete control of the helpless victim. Proper knowledge and training would of course prevent this, but such an obsession usually leads to, or is considered, insanity. 21. When one compares the messages received from the people of space as revealed through the several contacts who are acting as spokesmen for them, one wonders if our contagion of fear has actually reached out to other planets. In all cases there seems to be great concern as to the activities of men of Earth, especially in the field of rocketry and space travel, but more particularly in regard to nuclear fission and thermonuclear experiments. The power of the atomic bomb explosions have undoubtedly caused great discomfort to the denizens of the ethers immediately surrounding our Earth, as has been repeatedly stated by writers who claim to know something of the creatures and beings living in these realms. That there is life in these regions may be doubted by many, but there is every reason to believe that life in one form or another is spread throughout the universe, and the opinion is fast gaining ground in all circles that we are not alone and that mankind may yet be found to dwell in many other portions of the universe, and not be the exclusive inhabitants of Venus and Mars. But that worlds teeming with life may exist in space around us and yet not be seen by us is a new concept to some, but it is by no means a new one, neither is it too difficult to understand when one realizes that the visible universe comprises only a very small portion of the vast unseen portion, unseen only because we do not have the means to. 22. See it but nonetheless real and substantial. Those living in such realm might well wonder why we do not see them and respect their right to dwell in peace in their rightful home. So the Aetherians have plenty of reason to complain, but that our experiments in the realm of nuclear physics should disturb the people of Venus and Mars requires another explanation, namely, that they are genuinely concerned lest we contrive to destroy our planet or its people. The likelihood that we might succeed in shattering our planet is very remote, but it is far more likely that we might render it uninhabitable if we ignore the cumulative effects of atomic explosions and the consequent radioactive fallout. There is a definite saturation point which the nations of Earth will do well to observe. Fortunately, so far, careful checks are being made, but with the increasing use of atomic energy and peaceful uses this may not always be the case. And some other nationals might not be so scrupulous. And it is precisely here that the writer sees a greater danger than in a few carefully controlled military atomic explosions, such are soon to take place again, and which have caused a great deal of uneasiness among the civilian population who cannot be expected to understand the nature of the precautions taken. But there, extensive civilian use of atomic devices will be something much M0TE precarious. Just consider for a moment. 23. A day when not a few submarines and airplanes are powered by atomic energy, but civilian motor cars as well, and the day is not too far off with the punch on of the inquisitive young American for taking his car apart to see what makes it tick, hoping to build another hot rod to outshine all others. Watch out for an unpredictable amount of atomic radiation from thousands of illicit sources. Let's hope that protective absorption devices keep pace with the development of those emitting the deadly radiations. If no more progress were made in this direction than in the elimination of the smog menace, then indeed the human race would be on the road to self-asphyxiation, and might have just cause for dreaming nightly and praying daily for rescue by people from outer space. While we appreciate the value of an alertness to possible danger, we feel that there is an equal danger of a psychosis of fear engendered by too intense preoccupation with thoughts of disaster, cataclysms and death. From an overall all-long-range viewpoint, it does not matter too much just when any of us shuffle off the mortal coil. Our petty affairs may become temporarily discommoded, but the timetable of the cosmos is not upset thereby. In fact, we only confirm the departure schedule. Any soldier who has seen active service is well aware that no one gets shot unless the bullet has his number on it. Of course. 24. He does not mean this too literally, but does become convinced that no one dies before his time. From this we should learn that the affairs of man are being watched over from a point view beyond our ken, where the missing parts of the picture are clearly seen. So it is useless for us to allow ourselves to be driven into either terror or despair in anticipation of oming changes which may or may not materialize. Even death itself is not finality, for life is forever recurrent and continuous. Modern research has accumulated abundant evidence which confirms the testimony of the great seers and mystics of past ages, square that today one has vastly more certainty than the hope of future life offered by practically all religions of the world. So at last the great enemy, the fear of death, shall be destroyed, as stated in the Bible. This shall be very disconcerting to those who prey upon our fears of both this life and the one to come. Some phases of religion, of course, thrive upon our widely established fear of hell, and this may have had a salutary effect upon some of our more basely minded ancestors who could be tamed in no other way, but today most of the ministry look askance at a too literal fiery hell and hasten to find that this dire future prospective home is a picture which stems from a gross mistranslation of certain words together with a misunderstanding of the nature of the place alluded to in the text. On the other hand, there are 25. Those among the irreligious that only wish they had a middle dot hate to scare us middle dot with in order to undermine our sense of security and so scare us into accepting their pet middle dot utopian scheme, which somehow always seems to have the cloven hoof of slavery and materialism. Those who see a utopia in dialectical materialism are not likely to look with favor upon the present-day trend of looking to the people of other worlds and other planets for help in securing a solution of the problems inherent in their mundane existence. This is decried as an escape mechanism and heresy against an all-wise materialistic, or in some cases a very narrow-minded religious leadership who cannot see how they can fit it into their program. In the Iron Curtain countries, it is reported that even spiritualistic seances are frowned upon, if not actually outlawed, lest the people should get guidance from the spirits instead of from the all-wise state. So there is not much chance for a flying saucer contact to be made or for a middle dot message from the people of space to get through to the people, unless perchance the government itself is forced to recognize the existence of flying saucers and the validity of the contacts. While it appears now to be a frail hope, this may indeed provide the eventual answer, not alone in those countries, but in our own as well. Now that modern science is rapidly extending its confines into realms long known to the great mystics. 26. Seers, clairvoyants, occultists and alchemists, It has also been the fashion to discredit and ridicule their predecessors who did not have the research facilities now available and consequently made some mistakes or were unable to establish their hypotheses.